May it please the court.
You may proceed.
Ryan Woolley on behalf of the appellants, Bristol Care, Inc. and David Fennell. An arbitration agreement is like any other contract. It requires offer, acceptance, and consideration. Plaintiff here seeks to avoid her agreement to arbitrate, but does not contest that there was offer or acceptance, nor does she argue that the agreement was a contract of adhesion or was otherwise unconscionable, or that the underlying dispute does not fall within the terms of the arbitration agreement itself.
But what consideration did she get for agreeing to the arbitration?
What was the value
of the bargain for her? I mean, she's an at-will employee. She can be fired at any time anyway.
Well, the first response to that is we do not agree that she was an at-will employee.
Oh.
The employment agreement that she entered into makes it clear that she was not an at-will employee. Plaintiff focuses principally on that issue, on trying to put her in the at-will pigeonhole, and therefore to be able to take advantage of cases like Fry and Morrow and other appellate cases that have dealt with at-will employees and arbitration agreements. But in fact, in this case, the facts show that she was not at-will.
Was there a conflict between the terms of the arbitration agreement and the terms of the employment contract?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe there is a conflict, and I assume you're talking about the provision in the arbitration agreement that talks about how the arbitration agreement does not create a contract of employment. And it specifically says...
Well, and it says she's an employee at will.
It says that this agreement does not create a contract of employment, and that this agreement does not change the at-will status of the employee, but it does not preclude the possibility that there would be some other provision or some other facts that would show she is in fact an at-will employee.
It describes her as an at-will employee, is that correct?
I don't have the exact terminology in front of me, but
it's quoted
it
in the briefs.
Right, it's quoted in the briefs, it's quoted in the contract.
Can I ask a question, a factual question? Were the employment agreement and the arbitration agreement signed at the same time?
Yes, they were.
How come neither of you have cited our case, Johnson versus JF Enterprises, that says when you sign contracts at the same time as part of the same undertaking or proceeding, they're all part basically the same transaction and you construe them together unless there's a specific reason to indicate otherwise in the contracts that one is modifying the other?
We cited the earlier Supreme Court case of Martin versus USF&G on that same point, that when there are multiple documents that comprise the same transaction, and Johnson
versus
JF reaches the same.
So why doesn't then the arbitration agreement saying she's an employee at will explain your understanding of the severance pay 5-day provision and show that you don't think it changed the fact that she was an employee at will?
Well, I'm sorry. The employment agreement is the document that establishes and defines the employment relationship.
But under Johnson, you have to consider all the documents signed at the same time together. The arbitration agreement signed at the same time calls her an employee at will. Why doesn't that reflect the employer's understanding that the agreement of 5 days notice before firing or paying her for those 5 days doesn't change her status as an employee at will?
Well, I guess there's two responses to that. One is calling someone an employee at will doesn't change the actual facts. And the actual facts are there are limitations on the right to terminate and a notice that is required. And that is not employment at will. The Johnson case and the Martin case would say you consider all of the documents and you should not construe them in a way that makes one of the documents completely superfluous. Mm-hmm. And that, I believe, is the argument that the plaintiff's making here on that issue.
Opposing counsel cites some cases saying that provision for severance pay does not turn an at-will employee into a non-at-will employee. Can you address those cases?
Certainly. Neither one of those cases say that.
Okay.
The Earl versus St. Louis case involved a contract specifically for severance. And the question was, is that severance pay contract, was there consideration for it? And in that case, the employee specifically negotiated severance pay in a contract, and in exchange, the employee gave up his right to seek a service letter. The court said that was a mutual exchange of promises. I'll pay you severance pay if you won't seek a service letter, mm-hmm. and that was an enforceable contract. It says nothing about whether severance pay is sufficient consideration or not.
Okay.
The other case, the Carson case.
But there was the severance pay was in lieu of a, requiring a severance letter. So there was consideration and a bargain.
That's right. And in this case, the quote-unquote severance pay, the 5 days pay in lieu of notice, is given by the employer in exchange for, among other things, the agreement to arbitrate. And so that that agreement to provide the pay is consideration for the agreement to arbitrate the employment disputes.
Is that the only consideration that you're arguing?
No. As we cited in our brief, there are a number of different kinds of consideration here. The fact that her status changed from an at-will employee who had no employment agreements at all to an employee who was the beneficiary of the notice and restrictions provisions that we were discussing earlier, that is one form of consideration, that change in her status to a not at-will employee. There are also mutual promises in the arbitration agreement itself, where the company agrees that it will arbitrate certain kinds of claims, and the company agrees that it will pay the entire arbitrator fee and other costs of the arbitration. That in and of itself is consideration for the agreement to arbitrate, and there are a number of cases that talk about that.
There seems to be a debate in the briefs as to whether or not your right to change the arbitration agreement would be applied retroactively to claims already asserted by an employee.
Right.
What's your position with respect to that?
The language of the arbitration agreement does not permit the company to retroactively change the rules of the game. It requires 30 days prior notice for any change to become effective. And as we explained on our brief, I think just the use of the word prior requires that anything going on in the future, or I'm sorry, that any change will have to affect something going on in the future. You can't give prior notice of something that you're changing in the past. Also, the rules of arbitration that are incorporated into the arbitration agreement also specifically say that once a claim is filed, then the rules for proceeding on that arbitration are fixed at that point and can't be changed.
What if your amendment, though, was to change the part of the arbitration agreement that binds you to the result? What if you took that out? Would that change apply to an arbitration already ongoing?
No. Again, as I said, I think it could only apply, because prior notice is required, it could only apply to something that happens after that that amendment becomes effective.
So for the employee to preserve a claim under the existing rules, do they have to assert it, or does it just have to arise?
That's really not an issue that was briefed much in this case. I think certainly if it had been asserted, it would be protected. I think also if it arose, it probably also would be protected, because, again, the change would have to take effect sometime in the future, at least 30 days into the future. So anything that's already happened has happened under the terms and provisions of the agreement as it existed at that time. Another form of consideration besides the change to employment at will or employment not at will and the individual agreements, promises in the arbitration agreement itself, there are benefits that are provided to the employee in the employment agreement, the right to live in the facility, the right to have utilities paid and different things like that. So there are a number of things flowing from the company to
well,
the
that's
employee.
Part of a remuneration, but if she's an employee at will, I mean, she could just be told, get out now, and that would be permitted. So how is that a benefit for her?
Well, and again, our position...
Any more than, you know, whatever her salary is, and
right.
Yet that's not enough to...
I mean, our position is that she's not an employee at will, that the employment agreement, which defines the employment relationship, clearly restricts the company's ability to terminate her employment at any time. And that because of that, that would make the right to live and the utilities and things like that a benefit.
Can you explain how she benefits from the 30-day notice provision, if she could just be fired at any time during that 30 days? I mean, I'm not clear how that's a benefit to her.
I'm not sure that particularly is a benefit to her. It's a restriction on the company's ability to make a change.
So what is her consideration then for the arbitration agreement, other than the 5 days?
The agreement of the company to also arbitrate disputes and to pay for the arbitration, and then the things in the employment agreement, as we've been discussing, which we believe are binding on the company because of the limitations on their ability to terminate.
But the arbitration is to the benefit of the company, to avoid any lawsuits, so certainly you wouldn't pay for the cost of arbitration. And also, she didn't negotiate this agreement. The arbitration agreement clearly says she's an at-will employee. Did she have any, you're the ones that, you drafted that arbitration agreement, did you not?
The employer did, yes.
Right.
I don't think the issue is before the court in this case about whether arbitration is beneficial to one side or the other. I think both sides get benefits out of handling a dispute through arbitration.
What benefits does she get?
Things can be done quicker, faster, with less formality in the presentation of the case. She's entitled to all of the same benefits and remedies, including attorney's fees, that she would be entitled to in court. There really is no substantive difference between, and also.
And where are the arbitrators picked from?
I'm sorry?
And who are the arbitrators? Who are who's the group of arbitrators that you get, that you pick from?
The agreement specifies that the American Arbitration Association will be the body that proposes arbitrators, and then their processes. They identify 10, I think.
Anyone like her?
I'm sorry?
Anyone like her?
Typically, they're attorneys that are proposed as the arbitrators under the AAA panel. So I'm not sure what you mean by anyone like her, but there certainly will be women.
Anyone like her that she could pick. I don't it's going to be a fair group of arbitrators. It's not, you want to have someone that would be someone might be on her side, maybe.
Well, she and her counsel have complete input in the actual selection of the arbitrator. But the AAA only proposes a panel, and then the two sides rank those panels according to their preferences, and then the arbitrator matches up who has the best score, maybe.
Thank you very
AAA.
Much.
I know your time's up, but I have, with the indulgence of the Chief, I have one additional question.
Certainly.
I'm confused about what the effect is of the language in the arbitration agreement that says, notwithstanding this agreement, either Baker or Bristol Care can terminate the employment at any time for any reason with or without cause. That's all part of the same transaction that has to be given equal effect to any other provisions in the documents. But you're saying there's no conflict. Right. But you're saying that she, in fact, couldn't be fired at any time with or without cause.
That is correct. I think the only way, because we do have to consider all the documents in the transaction together, the way to read those in harmony is that the arbitration agreement itself does not create any kind of contractual rights regarding her employment. And if the arbitration agreement had been the only document she signed, then it would say she remains an at-will employee just like she normally would have been. But it does not say that there's no other potential
way. It does, actually. It's not saying this. It does say this doesn't create any rights. So it does say what you're saying.
Right.
But then it says, regardless of this agreement, either employee can terminate for any reason with or without cause.
Well, and regardless of the arbitration agreement, that's true, but the employment agreement puts additional restrictions on the employer beyond.
Why doesn't that create a conflict, and how do we resolve that conflict?
I guess the best way to say it is that the arbitration agreement doesn't preclude the fact or the possibility that there would be an additional agreement or additional facts that would in fact change the relationship. That the arbitration agreement doesn't cancel out everything else that ever happened in the
law. Okay, let me ask it more hypothetically.
Sure.
If this court were to read this to be inconsistent with, if we were to read the 5-day severance pay notice provision as providing some sort of change from at-will employment, and indicate she can't immediately be fired, she has to get 5 days notice, and that's sufficient to take it out of at-will. And the arbitration agreement assigned as part of the same transaction says, in fact, she can be fired at any time. There has to be a method for resolving the conflict between those if this court finds there is a conflict.
Okay.
Can you assist us in how we would resolve that conflict should the court get to that point?
I think the method to resolve that conflict would be to follow the contract interpretation principle that you must give effect to all of the provisions of the transaction, of the agreement, and do what you can to harmonize those. And only if they can't be harmonized, then do you have a conflict that you have to try to address. And I think in this case, the way to harmonize it is, as I said, the arbitration agreement in and of itself doesn't create any additional contractual rights, but the employment agreement does create specific contractual rights. It's as if I had a contract that said, that had, you know, all kinds of, you know, for cause provisions and restrictions like the employment agreement does, but then at the very bottom it says, oh, by the way, this is an at-will employment agreement. That can't be, you can't use the words to change the facts, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Thank
the
you.
Arbitration agreement itself, I'm sorry.
And I think you're arguing that the employment agreement is more specific as to the terms of employment as opposed to the arbitration agreement.
Right. It clearly is the document that creates and defines the employment relationship, which is what the issue is in respect to the nature of that relationship. Thank you.
No further questions. Thank you. You'll have 3 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court?
Good morning. You may proceed.
Ben Franklin was quoted as saying, well done is better than well said. Before this Court is an arbitration agreement that was not well done. Defense counsel argues to transform the arbitration agreement from what was written to what was wished for. Defendant carries the burden today of proving a valid and enforceable arbitration agreement exists. This is a burden that cannot be met. Defendant enjoyed the power in drafting the arbitration agreement. Defendant should also carry the shortcomings of that document as well today. The DeKalb County Circuit Court ruling should be upheld for two reasons. One, defendant drafted Section 3 of the arbitration agreement, and it clearly lays out an at-will employment relationship between the defendant and the plaintiff. And two, Section 24 of that arbitration agreement retains a unilateral power to amend the arbitration agreement at any time for the defendant. This violates Missouri's basic contract principles. Section 3 of the arbitration agreement is titled Employment at Will. It reads, it does not alter the status as an at-will employee. Further, it allows either party to terminate that employment at any time for any reason with or without cause. This is consistent with at-will employment, which it is titled.
Do you concede that, or I know that that is in conflict with the provisions of the employment agreement?
Your Honor, if we consider the employment agreement, it describes an employment period as indefinite. It provides multiple ways that the person can be terminated on a moment's notice. These are the hallmarks of at-will employment. Defense counsel argues that a 5-day severance pay package is going to transform the at-will employment to a contract of employment. The Court of Appeals has already ruled that's nothing more than a severance package. But as the justices have brought forth today, Johnson X. Rel. Johnson v. JF Enterprises, says contemporaneously signed documents shall be construed together and harmonized if possible. If documents cannot be harmonized, they should be construed against the drafter. The defendant is the drafter here today. Section 3 is unambiguous. We have an at-will employment relationship. The at-will employment relationship is furthered within the employment agreement. It describes a period as indefinite. It tells multiple ways to terminate on a moment's notice. This is consistent.
Does, because of the burden of proof, does it matter the legal or the context in which the argument is presented to us? If your client had been fired as an at-will employee, you would be in here arguing that the provisions in the employment contract govern and make it less than an at-will employment circumstance.
Your Honor, our focus today is the arbitration agreement. We're not technically arguing about the employment agreement,
as Judge Stitt points out, they were signed simultaneously, therefore they are construed together to be one contract.
And so the
question I have is, if she came forward and was trying to preserve and get the benefit of the employment contract, we would be looking at it to say, well, that's in contrast, and it certainly seems as though she would be entitled to the benefit of that. And so my question to you is that the terms of the employment contract superseded the terms of the arbitration contract. So is it significant? Is there a legal reason why we interpret the contracts differently? Because there is the burden on the employer to prove that she is bound by the arbitration agreement than if she were here saying that she got the benefit of the employment contract.
Yes, there is a burden upon the employer, Your Honor, and I guess you're essentially asking me to wear those shoes
and argue. How does that impact, because it's a question of law, correct, what the legal the provisions of their agreement is. So we determine that as a matter of law. And is that determined differently because of the nature of a lawsuit and who has the burden of proof?
I think it is, Your Honor. The burden is upon the defendant to prove that something other than at-will employment existed here.
Well, why is that? That's where I get lost. Why is that?
Well, the defendant needs to prove consideration within the at-will employment.
Okay, so why can't he do that even if she's an at-will employee? Why aren't the other things that they list adequate consideration, including a five-day severance package, even if that leaves her an at-will employee?
Well, the at-will employment does not provide sufficient consideration. That was the court's holding in Morrow and Morrow v. Hallmark in the Friday.
Not our court.
And additionally, yes, in your court as well. Additionally, in Whitworth v. McBride, the Court of Appeals has found if the at-will employment, which is terminable on a moment's notice, doesn't provide sufficient consideration, additionally, the remunerations and the benefits the defense counsel offers for further consideration do not act as adequate consideration as well, Your Honor.
Because why? That's what I'm interested in.
Because they can become terminated on a moment's notice. And when the employment becomes terminated on a moment's notice, so too does the requirement to arbitrate, Your Honor.
But she gets a five-day severance. Even if she's at will, she still has that contractual right. Why isn't that consideration over and above her status as an at-will employee?
Your Honor, within the employment agreement, the five-day severance defense counsel speaks of, if you'll consider the employment agreement, Section 2A and 2B. 2A is almost like an either-or. Plaintiff here was terminated as an at-will employee. She did not receive a five-day severance. She did not receive 5 days' notice. She was terminated and booted out of the apartment that same day in accordance as an at-will employment, which is what Section 3 says. That's how she was treated. So
she didn't get the five-day severance?
No, sir. No, sir.
Well, but arguably, couldn't you, as following up on Judge Brackmer's question, have sued for violation of the agreement then because she had a right to that?
Well, you have a broad and vague contract there, Your Honor. Defense counsel would probably be sitting in my same shoes right now arguing, this isn't a five-day contract, this is an at-will employment agreement. Consider that we can terminate her indefinitely on a moment's notice. Look at our arbitration agreement. Section 3 clearly and plainly states an at-will employment agreement.
Are you conceding that five-day severance pay makes it not an at-will employment?
No, ma'am, okay. I am not. If you consider the St. Louis case you spoke about earlier, there the court held that the severance was not the consideration. The consideration was foregoing the right to sue letter. So that court held that the severance was not consideration to support an arbitration agreement. The consideration within that case was foregoing the right to the right to sue letter.
Severance actually works to the benefit of the employer in that unemployment benefits are diminished. If you get a severance agreement, you can't get the unemployment benefits you might otherwise get from the employer.
Well, and Your Honor, I apologize. I'm not up to date on the unemployment benefits that would be surrounding this matter.
If you get a severance agreement, you can't collect. Your unemployment is reduced dramatically.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I'm not prepared to debate.
So that's the benefit of the employer, not necessarily the employee.
I think some of the questions are going to as a policy matter. You cite a lot of Court of Appeals cases. This court has not directly addressed a number of those issues, and we relook at all the policy reasons for those decisions. We're not bound by Court of Appeals decisions. So can you make policy arguments for us, I presume, in favor of finding that either she was still an at-will employee or that severance pays an inadequate consideration for arbitration? Why is it inadequate?
Well, severance pay is inadequate here because, one, it was not provided. Like I said, Section 2A and 2B are either-or provision. The terms of the employment agreement are so broad and vague as to allow the defendant to escape any responsibility that it may have within that employment agreement.
Say we had one that did allow for severance pay or she had been paid. Would that be enough consideration, or is that not what we look at deciding whether there was consideration for the arbitration agreement?
That wouldn't be consideration, Your Honor, because when the employment at will relationship ended, it was part of the terms of that contract that the case would be arbitrated. So when that ended, so too did the need to arbitrate the dispute. The severance agreement is not further consideration within that employment at will relationship.
Is the is the at-will employment situation, whether or not that constitutes consideration, a matter of dispute between jurisdictions? Do some jurisdictions determine that continuance of a at-will employment situation is consideration? And there, is there a legitimate split of authority on that issue?
If I'm getting Your Honor's question correct, you're asking if at-will employment does act as consideration within some court.
Continue. In other words, would some jurisdictions find that that there is consideration, that the allowing of a continuance of an at-will employment situation is valid consideration for an arbitration agreement?
I know of none within Missouri, Your Honor.
Well, I understand that. That was why I asked the question. I've read the Court of Appeals cases you cite. I'm just wondering if there's a legitimate split of authority in that regard, because some of the federal cases seem to go the other way. I just wonder if it's a matter of what state you live in, whether or not that constitutes valid consideration.
I think it does depend on the jurisdiction, Your Honor. And I would illustrate, going to the second point of the argument the plaintiff would make, that the contract is illusory. Defendant has cited the 13 different cases there regarding Section 24. Of the 13, the one case that completely cites that completely backs the defendant's position that notice alone is sufficient is the Gratzer case out of Kansas. It is a federal district court case, and it did hold that at-will employment could act as consideration. That case was before the Western District Court of Appeals cases of Morrow, Fry, and Whitworth. Those three cases went opposite direction and set the Missouri precedent that at-will employment by itself is not consideration, Your Honor.
Speaking of illusory, how much would the 5 days severance pay be? What would be the amount of the 5 day severance?
Your Honor, that's debatable. That was the whole reason why this lawsuit was initially filed. It's plaintiff's position that
$1,000, less than $1,000.
I would say it's probably less than $1,000 if plaintiff wins out and she becomes an hourly employee, and you figure out based on the hours that she worked. No, we're looking less than $1,000 at that point, Your Honor. As I was saying, Section 24 does allow the defendant the unilateral right to amend the contract at either time. The defendant has argued it wouldn't do such a thing today. Defendant's argument misses the point. It's not that they would not amend the arbitration agreement. The point is that they created an arbitration agreement that retained the power at that time. Now, this is the exact argument that the defendant made in the Morrow case, that they would not amend the arbitration agreement despite retaining the power to do so. And there the court found that the defendant's concession, though worthy, differed from the language of the arbitration agreement. And further, the arbitration was written as to allow them to have a complete escape of all commitments within the arbitration agreement. I bring out that dictum because it's very important, because it follows this court's holding in State Ex Rel Vincent v. Schneider. And there this court found that a letter from the defendant attempting to soften the unconscionable position of an arbitration clause was ineffective. That the clause should be viewed as it existed at the time it was written. Here, at the time it was written, we have no restriction upon the power the defendant wishes to be placed on it now. Further, as I said, the defendant cited 13 different cases from around the country in an effort to prove that notice alone was sufficient. Of the 13, only one supported that. 9 of the 13 required notice and a restriction on when that power could be used. They wanted notice, and when the case was filed or the arbitration proceeding began, you could no longer amend the arbitration agreement. That is not existent today. The other three cases that defendants cited to required notice and the ability to accept the amendment by continued employment. Once again, that is not present today. What we have present today is we have a 30-day notice, but no restriction on when the power can be used. The defendant can still amend this contract, even to today. The defendant understands there needs to be a restriction on the power, and so they cite Section 7, and they claim that restricts the power. Section 7 reads,
they can, excuse me, they can amend what contract? Even
the arbitration agreement, Your Honor, even to today.
The agreement between who?
Between, before this court, the plaintiff and the defendant. That arbitration agreement could still be amended, Your Honor.
Okay.
What about the 30-day prior notice provision? Does that imply that it's a prospective application as opposed to retrospective?
The 30-day notice is just 30 days notice that we're going to change the amendment, Your Honor. And what prevents the defendant from right now removing that? There's nothing that prevents.
Does your argument depend on that? I mean, what if we found it was prospective only? Does that mean there was consideration and you're out of court, or you're in the arbitration?
Such a ruling would essentially transform the arbitration agreement from what was written to to what the defendant is arguing for today and go against this court's position in the past.
I'm asking if we agreed with defendant that it was written to be prospective only, which I understand you don't think it is. I'm asking a hypothetical question.
Okay.
If we were to read it that it was prospective only, would that be adequate consideration, or is that not consideration?
No, I still don't think, and I don't think it's consideration as much as it destroys all the other promises made within this arbitration agreement, Your Honor. It essentially allows them to be illusory because it allows all those promises to be destroyed. So I guess to answer Your Honor's question, if it was to where they couldn't change it today and those promises were set in stone, then yeah, we may be looking at a different case. But that's not the matter before the court today. The matter before the court today is the defendant still can amend the arbitration agreement, which renders all those promises illusory, the promise to arbitrate, the promise to pay the arbitrator. All that can be changed up to this date. Further, defense counsel argued that Section 7 of the arbitration agreement restricted that power. Section 7 does not restrict the power. And in fact, all it does is set forth what rules of the AAA apply to the arbitration agreement. But the end of that section is what really matters. It states, in the event any applicable rule or procedure adopted by the AAA conflicts with this agreement, the terms of the agreement govern. So, if the defendant changes the arbitration agreement today and it conflicts with the rules of the AAA, the arbitration agreement still rules. Thus, any amendment made today will apply to the matter before the court. The defendant has not restricted the power which is required.
Now, do you have any information regarding how often the severance agreement has actually been paid? I mean, if that's a consideration and it's illusory, how much consideration is that? If they did not pay the severance to your client, do you know if they ever paid the severance?
Your Honor, I can tell you there's no evidence before the court today regarding that. We have spoke with more people than we ever thought we would speak with once this case was filed, and I'm yet to hear of one person to receive that severance agreement or the 5 days notice. It's a continual theme that I was dismissed on a moment's notice and booted from my apartment. There's a hornet's nest waiting if we make it to the DeKalb County.
Is there a booted from the apartment with no protections under the laws of the state of Missouri for being booted out of an apartment?
It's a benefit of the at-will employment relationship, Your Honor. And that's the problem with the at-will employment relationship providing the consideration for the arbitration agreement. Because the second that relationship ended, so too did all the benefits that came along with it.
Not even the unlawful detainer kind of you have no protections whatsoever, you just booted out of the apartment.
My understanding is, Your Honor, it is nothing more than part of the at-will employment relationship benefit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Let me start by answering Judge Fisher's question. There are many states that find that continued at-will employment is, in fact, sufficient consideration. There are a number of federal decisions in Missouri which find continued at-will employment to be consideration. There was a very recent case from the Western District where Judge Wright enforced an arbitration agreement that was presented to the employee at the time they were hired, and he said that that was consideration.
And Morrow and other cases say it's not, because before and after the arbitration agreement, you could be fired in 1 second, so you gain nothing. What is the answer to that argument?
I think the answer to that, and particularly as it relates to this case, because the plaintiff here was promoted, she achieved a change in status that, at least for some period of time, she had that status, including the benefits that relate to it, and that would provide.
But
the
she still could be out. She's still an at-will employee, and to say that, well, the fact we haven't fired her yet is consideration for this other agreement. I mean, that's. It seems to be a little bit of illusory there, too.
When do we assess a consideration? Do we wait till the end and look at it and see if it turned out to be a good idea?
No. It's clearly at the time the contract is entered into, and I think that's why we're talking about the language of the contract and not so much about what happened down the road. I do also want to say, in response to something that my opposing counsel had to say, there is absolutely nothing in this record about why this plaintiff was terminated. And you also have to remember that not only is there the 5-day notice or pay in lieu of notice provision, there is also a provision which restricts the ability to terminate somebody without giving that notice. You can terminate somebody without giving that notice. That is absolutely clear from the contract, but only for certain specific reasons. And so either one of those reasons applied here, or the company didn't pay something they should have paid, and the plaintiff should have sued us for that as well.
But, you have
but
to
that
give
doesn't them, change the fact that the contract itself provides for consideration.
But you have to give no notice whatsoever to remove the person from the apartment?
I'm not a real estate lawyer. I don't understand or I don't know the unlawful detainer rules, how that would apply. What the contract says is that for certain specific reasons, the employee can be terminated without notice. How that applies with respect to her.
But the employee lives in an apartment in the residential care facility, and
yes.
If they're no longer employed.
Then they have to leave. You know, do they bring the sheriff in and take them out the second they tell them? I doubt it. But again, I think that's a matter of what happens after the fact, not whether the contract itself provides for consideration. Let me just say this again on the at-will issue. Mr. Watkins tried to describe the contract as being completely void of any kind of restriction on the client, on the company. In fact, if you think about it and you look at what the contract says, the company has given up its right to terminate this employee for company financial reasons or for no reason at all or for, you know, my cousin wants to have that job and so I'm going to terminate you. The company cannot do that without giving 5 days notice. And so, therefore, they have restricted their ability to terminate.
But they can do that if they give them 5 days notice. Again, they can dismiss them for whatever reason. My cousin wants the job, or they can dismiss them for whatever reason they want, as long as they give them the 5-day notice.
That's right, and that's what makes this completely different from employment at will, where you could do that without giving the employee any notice, and they would have no recourse or right to any kind of relief in court.
What so about a 5-day notice, that give them 5 days to leave the apartment? I mean, to leave your
Again, I apologize, but I really don't understand the detainer rules or whatever. I would guess as a practical matter that when the employee is no longer employed, they want them out as quickly as possible. They want the replacement.
So they don't get 5 days notice to leave the apartment?
If they're entitled to 5 days notice of being terminated, then they got 5 days notice to leave the apartment.
But counsel, if there weren't a separate arbitration agreement saying you can be terminated with immediately, I understand your argument, but where there's a conflict between the two provisions, and this is very specific, it says we can terminate you without notice, that conflict is resolved against the drafter, and you all are the drafter.
Again, all I can say is that the rule, I believe, about or the contractual interpretation provision about resolving an issue against the drafter, I believe is described in Missouri cases as the interpretation provision of last resort.
If we find they're in conflict, right.
And that you first try to ascertain
Absolutely.
The intent of the parties and to harmonize all of the provisions so that the interpretation
that is what the Johnson case says.
Doesn't destroy the entire agreement. And if the interpretation is that somehow the arbitration agreement, which does not establish the employment relationship, somehow supersedes the employment agreement.
They're all interpreted together. They're like one contract, and they have conflicting clauses. How do we resolve a conflict?
And I hope I've given you the answer to that.
I mean, you think they can be harmonized,
yes.
But if they're in conflict, okay.
But that if they are believed to be in conflict, and that particular provision is adopted as the controlling provision, then that would destroy the entire employment agreement. It would take away all of the restrictions and things in the employment agreement. And so I think that shows why there must be harmonized, why they can be harmonized. Because otherwise it would completely eliminate half of the agreement that the parties entered into.
Thank you, counsel.
All right, there's no further questions. The matter will be taken under advisement.